According to my wife, who is not a writer, writers should talk to writers about writing and not to anybody else about writing. Because when I talk to her about writing, she kind of glazes over, you know, and says, can we move on to something other than your book? And I say, yeah, sure. Like what? Like the book cover?
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. Well, we're back at you again on the Going North Podcast, my friends. That's right indeed. It's the era of returning guests, y'all. That's right indeed. We're back at you again with one of the most popular freaking guests. He was in the top freaking 10 list back in 2021. 4 years later, my man's back and better than ever because he's back with a thriller novel indeed. So let's give it up for this wonderful gentleman right here, who is the one, the only best-selling author, as well as a foreign media executive, as well as the founder of the Comedy Channel, the one, the only, A to the B, Mr. Art Bell. How you doing today, Art?
I'm good, Dom. How you doing? It's great to be back.
Oh, yeah. Honored to have you back. I was surprised. I'm like, shake. I got a new book and a comeback on. I'm like, hell yeah, you can.
Well, I still feel honored. I do.
Oh, man. So, my goodness, man, the fact that it's been freaking 4 years, no less, is still kind of scary to me. Like, how have you been? What led you to decide to jump into the world of thriller writing?
I don't know. That's an interesting question. I wrote the memoir, and that was quite an undertaking. That was the memoir about my comedy experience. It's called Constant Comedy, How I Started Comedy Central and Lost My Sense of Humor, which pretty much describes the book. And then I started writing, I was writing some short stories. And I sat down to write a short story about a guy, kind of like me, but not me, who has never really faced violence before. And he gets dragged into a very, very bad, very violent situation. And he has to figure out how to deal with it. And I really thought I was going to just write a short story. But I kept going. And the more I wrote, the more I said, you know what? This is looking like a novel. And it ended up being a novel. So I'm very proud of it.
Congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
I guess the story's getting too good. I'm like, hey, wait a second. The hand can't stop moving.
That's pretty much what it was, you know? I mean, I felt myself writing to find out what the characters were going to do. You know, there's two kinds of writers. I'm sure you've heard this story. There's pantsers and plotters, they're called. Pantsers write by the seat of their pants, and plotters have 10,000 index cards up on the wall, scene by scene, quote by quote. You know, I didn't do that. A, I'm lazy. B, I didn't think that was a good way for me to write this thing. And as I said, I started with a character, and it's always good to start with characters when you're writing fiction. You know, you got to have your characters in mind. They didn't all show up on day one, but that guy and his terrible ex-wife showed up on day one. And I wanted to see what happened. And so I kept writing. And it's amazing when you're just kind of writing without knowing where the story's going to go, how it goes somewhere. I can't even explain. It's like magic. And then every once in a while, you'd write yourself into a corner lie awake for two nights just wondering what, how you're going to get out of this mess. And then you figure out how to get out of, you know, how to write your way around it. And then the other fascinating thing I found out about just letting the book write itself, basically, is sometimes interesting characters wander into the novel, you know, just by chance.
Yep.
I mean, it happened to me, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, but I was sort of like a quarter of the way through, and this private detective calls and says she can help because she's a friend of a friend, you know, that kind of stuff. And she turned out to be a great character. And, my wife is my first and foremost best reader, but I also have a writing group, and my writing group is like, wow, she's great. Gabrielle is great. You know, I wrote a few scenes with her, and suddenly she's in the whole novel. So, you know, that's how it works.
Hey, that's freaking great to hear, because it is hilarious how that comes about for like certain novels, especially when you take it from that stance of, hey, let's have the characters first in mind and just see where it goes indeed, and then random ghosts or just say characters just pop in out of nowhere, like, hey buddy, come on, put me in coach, come on, put me in.
that's kind of what happens. And also it's interesting to watch the characters develop. I have to say, I did a character sketch of the main character. His name's Henry. And I did an interview with his crazy ex-wife. I mean, you know, written interview, as if she were being interviewed by the cops, right? She's kind of a bad guy. But just to get a feel for them. But I didn't do that for any of the other characters. I wanted to know everything I could about these guys. And that's how I learned about it. But it's interesting to find out how their characters develop. You know, again, you're not plotting every character nuance. You're just seeing what they say and say, wow, I didn't know he was funny or whatever he was at that moment, you know. And it was just a fascinating journey, I have to say.
Fascinating indeed. So my goodness, so what was the writing process like compared with this book compared to the first one? Because it sounds like the constant comedy memoir, like you had all these stories to tell, as opposed to this where it's like, hey, you're kind of starting from scratch here, but you already got the book publishing under your belt.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'll tell you a funny story. I ran into Walter Mosley, who's a very famous writer. I mean, you guys know who Walter Mosley is, right?
Nice.
It was in the lobby of a New York hotel, and I said, Mr. Mosley, you know, like that, thinking, okay, if he hears me, good. If he doesn't hear me, better, because I don't know what I'm going to say. So Mr. Mosley says, yes, and he turns around, and I say, hi, I'm Art Bell, and I just wrote a thriller, and before that, I wrote a memoir. And he said, wait a second, you wrote a memoir? And then you wrote a thriller. He said, that's like going from wrestling to boxing. And I started laughing. I said, yeah, you know, yeah. I said, I'm going to use that. He said, okay. And then he walked away. That was the whole thing. I was dying for him to say, hey, if you need me to do a blurb or anything for your book, I'd be happy to do it. But of course, he didn't say that. I thought a lot about that, about what's the process of writing a memoir compared to writing, you know, any kind of fiction, but, you know, also thriller is a specific kind of fiction. And yeah, they're different. They are different because with the memoir, you're really kind of reaching back to remember what went on and how it went on. Now, I was pretty lucky because I have this really kind of generally useless talent of remembering a lot of stuff. My wife is always questioning me. Like, I remember conversations from when I was six. I mean, listen, I'm sure I don't remember everything, but I do remember very important conversations. So when I sat down and I thought, okay, I'm going to write a story that happened to me at Comedy Central. And the story was, this is the first story I wrote about it. The story was about this, the guy who was the head writer at Comedy. And he didn't like me very much because I was like a comedy newbie. I didn't know much about it. And he wanted to have a very serious talk with me about what comedy was from his point of view, because he was a comedy guy and I wasn't. So I said, okay, Eddie, let's go. So he invites me to this this place. And I walk into the place, it's a hot day, and it's a strip club. I said, Eddie, he dragged me to a strip club. There's nobody in here but me, you, and the stripper. And he said, yeah. I said to myself, well, you know, he just wants to unnerve me, but I'm not going to let myself be unnerved. And I wrote that whole scene about what he said to me and what I said to him. And what I was trying to do was kind of get him more on my side, you know, be friends with the guy, or at least coworkers. He wasn't having it. He was just like, well, you don't know anything about comedy. I said, all right, I don't know anything about comedy, but I did really get this thing started. And we got to work together here. Anyway, that was the whole thing. So I read that story. I was actually taking a memoir class at Sarah Lawrence, and I read that story. You know, I'd written about a billion memoir stories to that point that I read to that class and other classes. But when I read that one, they went, wait a second. You were at Comedy Central? You invented comedy? You started Comedy Central? That's such a great story. So I said, really? And then I started writing some other stories because I had about a million of them. Listen, you work at a place for 8 or 9 years. I don't care where it is. Maybe not the post office, but otherwise, you're going to have some great stories. And believe me, at a comedy channel, I had a lot of stories to tell. And they weren't all stories about famous comedians or anything. It turned into my story about how I persevered and got this thing going against all odds. Because I went to work every day and expected they'd shut us down, but they didn't. Anyway, that was a great experience. Now, how was writing a thriller compared to that? Well, one thing that I think Walter Mosley wasn't considering when he said wrestling to boxing, because I think of wrestling and boxing is pretty different, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Like wrestling, you're kind of grappling around, probably not going to get hurt too bad, but boxing, you're getting hit in the face, which, believe me, having been hit in the face in my life, is not a good time.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it comes with concussions and other bad stuff. So I thought, well, what did Mr. Mosley mean? Did he mean that it was like that much harder, that much more difficult? I wasn't really clear. But what I started to say is what Mr. Mosley did not consider was that when you write a memoir, you're writing it from your point of view, meaning the whole story was like, I did this, I did that, I said that, I saw this. What you can't say is, here's what that guy was thinking at the time, because you don't know. You can't really look into anybody's mind. So then I sit down and write a thriller. I could have written it in third person or third person omniscient, as they call it, where you know everything about everybody, what they're thinking, what they're doing, you know, and you don't even have to be with the main character in a scene. You could, like, you know, go off with some minor character and hang out with them for a while. I didn't want to do that. I wanted this to be really a personal tale of a guy getting in trouble. A guy who had never been in trouble, getting in real trouble, you know? So I wrote it from his point of view. So I got to say I all the time. I did this, I did that, I did the other thing. And I said this, and I saw this, and I remember this. And I realized that was kind of like writing this guy's memoir, you know? I mean, what occurred to me as I'm writing it. So the more I thought about, well, is it really that different? And I think in this case, yes, of course it was different because I'm making it all up from scratch. Although, as I pointed out, some of it's just kind of showing up magically as I'm writing, you know, what they say. What people say and what people think and everything, or what the main character thinks. And I had nothing to rely on the way I did with memoir, where I could remember what was going on. But on the other hand, I'm telling this guy's story from his point of view. Isn't that like writing a memoir? I mean, without the memory part. So,
right.
I would say this to Mr. Mosley if I ever run into him again. Mr. Mosley, wrestling and boxing, I think the difference is more like wrestling on the high school team against some, you know, other team versus wrestling with your older brother. You know, I mean, it's different, and there's different things at stake, and there's different things to think about. Like, you really don't want to hurt your brother too bad. And he doesn't hopefully want to hurt you too bad. You're wrestling the guy from the next high school. He doesn't care if you die.
Yeah.
But you won't. But my point is this. I think that if you're writing both of those things in the first person, there are a lot of similarities. It feels kind of similar.
Good deal. Good to know indeed. That's right indeed. Because, yeah, funny enough, it actually reminds me of a recent episode, if I'm not mistaken, where a guest mentioned how they basically were finishing up their late mom's fiction project, and just the fact that it was all in third person, they had to switch to first person, and it's like, dude, this is just to make that switch was everything, but in your case, you didn't even have to worry about that switch because, hey, he already had the freaking rubric. It was just coming from this guy's perspective, this character's perspective.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And mind you, I've written short stories. This is my only novel, but I've written short stories in the third person. And it's a different kettle of fish, I got to tell you. It's just, you know, as I said, you can go places you can't go when you're telling from the first person. And I liked it. I like it. But I'm kind of stuck on this first person thrower thing right now. I think I like that.
That's what I'm talking about indeed. It's like, hey, once you find your lane and you're good in it, folks like to stay in it.
Well, true. And my publisher wants me to write a sequel. And I said, oh, really? Because I'm not sitting on a billion ideas for what happens next. I didn't even think I would write a sequel, but they like the characters, so I'm going to write a sequel. So maybe if any of your listeners have some ideas after they read my book, by the way, which is called, did you mention what it was called?
But funny enough, not even yet. We just jumped into it.
Oh, man. Well, if I don't tell people what it's called, they're not going to know what to read. It's called What She's Hiding. It's a thriller, and my name is Art Bell. It says, by Art Bell. That's all you have to remember. Anyway, it's coming out on March 25th, and I really want people to read it. I think it's a good book. Anyway. That was kind of the journey of writing that book.
Yeah. I guess in this special case, it's What She's Hiding. I was hiding the title of the book so we can unveil the real title of the book later in the conversation.
Exactly.
Although the character in the book, she's probably hiding something more diabolical, I can imagine.
That's for sure. And see, I don't, you know, this is, I shouldn't really say this, but I don't really know what the next book is about. But when people ask me, I have to make it up. So I just say, they're going to get in a lot of trouble this time. And that seems to kind of fit the bill. So anyway, yeah, quite an adventure. I'll tell you, writing a book is an adventure. Writing the comedy book was an adventure because I got to meet people like you, you know, which was fun. I got to hear from people I hadn't heard from in forever, you know, people I worked with. And I also, and this was really interesting, kind of a bonus, I got to hear from other writers. Mm. You know, they'd write to me and say, hey, that was quite a book you wrote. And I hope that happens with the novel too, because it's fun to talk to other writers about writing. As a matter of fact, according to my wife, who is not a writer, writers should talk to writers about writing and not to anybody else about writing. When I talk to her about writing, she kind of glazes over, you know, and says, can we move on to something other than your book? And I say, yeah, sure. Like what? Like the book cover? You know, I guess I want to clarify one thing too, because, you know, I worked at two channels, notably. I worked at a bunch of channels, but I worked at Court TV as well. I don't know if you remember that, Dom, but I was president of Court TV after comedy. And I think that gave me some insight. I mean, it had to, because we were doing, you know, real life true crime documentaries. And, you know, a true crime documentary, when you're making a true crime documentary, you're telling a story. And you're relying on people's recollections and you're relying on what people say. And then you get to do some voiceover sometimes, and then you get to do some reenactment sometimes. But it's really, you know, it's really a storytelling process. And that's, you know, believe me, you don't cut your teeth on storytelling in the same way when you're at a comedy channel, because that's just a different thing. But this really taught me two things. One, how do you construct a story with a beginning, middle, and end, and all the other things in between? And the second thing is it gave me great insight into the, what I always call the judicial system, you know, the criminal justice system. You saw how the courts worked. You saw we spent a lot of time talking to cops, a lot of time talking to forensic scientists, a lot of time talking to detectives. And also, and this was, for me, some of the most fascinating stuff, talking to people who wrote about why criminals do what criminals do. And, you know, these people had written books on it, studied it and everything else, and they were very smart. And I loved talking to them about it. And some of their insights were pretty, were interesting. But all of that kind of helped me as I was writing this book, thinking about what it's like to be in a crime situation. You know, when a crime is taking place and you're the victim, you know, what must that be like? Or what's it like to be interviewed by a cop when they think, or a detective rather, when they think you're the perpetrator and you're not? What's that like? We did plenty of stories about that, you know, wrong man kind of stories, because that happens all the time. Anyway, that was a very important part of it. So I have that. And then people say, oh, well, is your thriller funny? Like the comedy book was kind of, you know, had a lot of comedy in it, funny stuff. Is your thriller funny? And I say, no, my thriller is a thriller. It's not funny. However, like life, there's some funny moments, you know, and the character, the main character, especially Henry, and the detective, her name is Gabriella, they have some great conversations that are pretty funny. And I like that because I think it sets it apart from a lot of thrillers and mysteries, which are kind of like, you know, boom, just the straight facts, you know, like what's going on and things get bad and then things get worse. No, listen, I understand that. But then people say, oh, so is your book hysterically funny? And it's like, no, it's not even close to hysterically funny. It's not a sitcom, you know, it's not a comedic situation. It's a thriller situation. But my point about writing anything is that if there's not a little bit of humor in it, you know, like, wake me when that's over. Because that's life. That's real life. Am I right, Dom, or am I crazy?
Oh, no, you're right about that one.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah, because it's true, because folks are like, oh, yeah, he's the founder of Comedy Central. Like, there's going to be freaking lots of jokes in this one, probably. It's like, well, there's probably some humor, but it ain't really in there like that. It's supposed to be thrilling.
It's funny because people expected the comedy book to be funny. And I got good reviews, but every once in a while somebody say, yeah, it's not as funny as I thought it would be. It's like, I wasn't writing a comedy screed, you know, I was just writing about what happened. And yeah, a lot of it was funny. But I just want people to understand that I think having a sense of humor is about one of the most important things you can have in life as well as in your writing, you know? So we'll see. We'll see what people say. Early reviews are good. I'm doing a bunch of signings at a bunch of bookstores. And if nobody reads it, I'm still proud of it.
Well, with some of the names that endorsed it, I'm sure you're going to have a good number of readers.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to have some good endorsements. So from some very, very high-profile crime writers. And yeah, I'm proud of that. They liked it. They liked the book. It's always like kind of a surprise. Wait a second, what? You liked it? You know? Yeah, one of the, I'm not bragging here, but it was just a great moment for me. One of the people we sent the book to was Tess Gerritsen. I don't know if you know her, but she's a great crime writer. I love her stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, right. Tess Gerritsen's going to give me a blurb. I don't think so. But anyway, time goes by. She never got back to any of us, right? And my publisher. And then one day she called my publisher. She says, "Hey, I'm reading Art's book. It's really good. I hope I'm not too late for a blurb." So we stopped the presses, you know. No, you're not too late. But that's what you like to hear from people, is that, you know, "I'm reading your book and I like it." That's all you care about. And maybe you're getting something out of it beyond just entertainment. You have a lot of writers in your audience, isn't that right? I think you do.
Oh, yeah. Shows about highlighting authors. It's been 900 plus so far.
Yeah. A lot of nonfiction writers too, right?
Oh, yeah. But hey, multiple genres welcomed. We even had Hank Phillippe Ryan on, so good times.
Now, see, it's interesting. Do some of your writers write in multiple genres? I mean, do they write? You know, I tried science fiction in a short story. Man, that was like a disaster.
It was
fun. Well, you know, listen, all these things, all these genres are about people when you come right down to it. And I thought, okay, so I'll put these people in the future and give it a whirl, but didn't work out so well. But that's okay. You know, you gotta try things. You gotta stretch out a little bit. And which, as you know, Dom, I do, because this is like my third career at least. So, you know, got to keep changing it up. You don't want to do the same things over and over.
Sure, indeed, on that one. You're so right about that. It'll get more boring than being a plank.
Yeah, really. I've had opportunities to, like, do things over. Like, when I left Court TV, I was invited to offer a job at another similar channel. And I said, no, I already did that. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do more crime stuff. Not that I didn't like it, but I do it twice. So I was unemployed for 6 years. No, not really. No, I just went on to other things.
Oh, yeah, that's right, indeed. Other things, indeed. So, my goodness, was that you going on a tour promoting this wonderful new shiny book for folks to devour and putting their brains in and enjoy? Is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often?
How did you get into writing after you retired from working? And I think that's a good question, because I think there's a lot of people who want to write, who don't write. And the good news about not working in corporate, well, it was corporate for me, but not working in whatever your job was, is suddenly you got a whole lot of time and you got no excuses. So if you want to write, you know, you got to pursue it. And the way I pursued it, because people want to know, is I was living in New York at the time, and there was a writing institute, the Sarah Lawrence Writing Institute. And I checked that out. And I started taking classes there. And, Dom, I got to tell you, one of the things I've learned in my few years on this earth is teachers make such a difference. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, even from, I play piano and I play drums and even when I was playing tennis, you know, you take a lesson with somebody who really knows what they're doing. You walk out of there, first of all, you're amazed at how much you don't know about what you're doing. And secondly, the amount that they can improve you in a short period of time is just astounding. So I went to Sarah Lawrence Writing Institute, and I had some terrific teachers. You know, I took a few classes. I started memoir. Everybody should start. That's my little bit of advice. You start with memoir. Why? Because you know the story. You know, it happened to me. I was there. This is how I remember it. And you get to write it how you remember it. You know, one great thing about memoir, everybody says, oh, you know, I read your memoir. I was at that thing. And it didn't happen that way. It's like, yeah, tough. That's the way I remember it. You know, never apologize for how you remember it, because that's how it occurs to you. So anyway, memoir is a great place to start your writing. And then I moved on from there. You know, as I said, just trying some fiction, great teachers. And I will, you know, continue to be in touch with teachers and professors and studying writing, you know. But one thing I didn't have that everybody has now is all these electronic gadgets to tell you what to say. Let's talk a little AI here, Dom.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little AI. Most of my writer friends have tried it for something, you know, and I actually, I'm going to admit something here. I tried it when I had to come up with a title for my book, right? Because I figured, okay, I'm just going to put in my 4 or 5 page summary of my book, my thriller, and it's going to spit out like some great titles. I just know because it's AI, you know, artificial intelligence, man. It can do anything. So I did that, and I get a list of titles. And half of them were like things you read, like The Maltese Falcon. Oh, that'd be a great title for my book, except it's Taken, you know? And I was very disappointed in the list of titles that it spit out. And let me tell you something, as long as we're talking about titles, it's hard to figure out what to call your book. It is hard. And then we'll get back to AI, because I love that. I brainstormed with myself a list of, honestly, 75 titles. 75.
Wow.
You know which one became the title? None of them. That's what happened. Because I called it something, and then when the publisher said, okay, we're going to publish your book, and got all excited about it, he said, but we're not going to call it that. I said, okay, what are we going to call it? So we had some good meetings on, you know, what to call it, and we did arrive at What She's Hiding, and then I think is a great title for the book. I really do. Anyway, AI and writing. Yeah. Interesting. There was an article in the New York Times, I think it was the New York Times, where they asked one guy, a writer, to write a short story, and they gave him some cues, you know, we want you to write about beaches and this, that, and the other thing. And we're going to give the same prompts to AI. And then we're going to publish both stories, and we're going to ask people to say which one is the real writer and which one is AI. So I took the challenge. I read them both. And I got to tell you, it wasn't even close. I mean, here's the good thing about AI. It's not like it didn't make sense. It's not like it didn't follow the prompts. But man, it was not creative writing. It was just like boring writing. It used a lot of hackneyed, trite expressions, you know, stuff that you don't want in your writing. So for me, it was a piece of cake picking it out. And I think for a while, it's going to be like that. I think it's going to be like that, that it's not going to take over writing. I saw a writer, very distinguished writer. What is her name? I always forget her name. Anyway, she wrote about a billion books. She's an English writer. And we saw her on stage. And she's talking to a guy, a younger guy who's a playwright. And the younger guy who's a playwright says, look, all my friends say that AI can write a rom-com. Like right now, AI can write a real rom-com script. And she glared at him it was Margaret Atwood. That's who it was. Margaret Atwood.
Okay.
No, she was fabulous.
Nice.
She's 80 something years old. She was fabulous. So Margaret Atwood glares at this guy and says, AI can write a B movie, a B rom-com. And he says, well, don't you think that in time, you know, that it, she says, no, it will write B movies. And the audience was so clearly on her side.
You know? Right.
Because right. She's got 40 years of experience and 20 books on this guy. But on top of that, it's just almost inconceivable that AI is going to come up with Moby Dick or Portnoy's Complaint or any of the great novels that have been written. From the start of great novels. I mean, how could that possibly be the case? And maybe some of your listeners, you know, I'd be interested to know if you're going to get a lot of cards and letters on this one. Did that idiot Art Bell say that AI is never going to be able to write good stuff? Well, it's not exactly that, but I just, you know, the human mind, you know, is just so much more capable, I think, of creating wonderful characters and crazy, crazy experiences and all kinds of stuff. So, I'm hoping writers hang in there and write. Some of my writer friends, they use AI for character sketches. You know, they say, okay, I want a character that's kind of a bad guy, and he lives in Brooklyn, and he had a terrible upbringing. Tell me what you know about him. And then, they read 3 pages of description of this guy, which, true, the AI thing, I don't know what you call it, made up. But I think the writer's just being lazy, because the writer could have, as I said, I did a character sketch. I did an interview with a character. You can do that. That's what writing is about, you know? And I'm a member of the Authors Guild, which is, you know, listen, that's not a big deal. If you write a book, you get to be a member. But they are pushing something now that I think is really special, which is they will give you a badge that says, for your book, which says, written by a human.
Yeah, nice.
I think that is so cool. I think that is just really important. Written by a human. Because I think as time goes by, we're going to want to see that. We're going to want to see that. Look, there's all kinds of writings. You know, I've met a couple of ghostwriters here in, I live out in Utah. And for some reason, I met two. I never met one in my life. Now I know two. But these are guys who wrote the stories of, you know, famous people. They wrote their memoirs. So it's kind of an as-told-to thing, but they get no credit for it. But I think that's a legitimate partnership in writing. Whereas writing with AI, I'm not thinking that is a legitimate partnership. You know, man, look, call me old-fashioned. But I see it the way Margaret Atwood does. I want humans to keep writing.
So you're there right, folks. Art is just art. It's not artificial, Bill, y'all.
Exactly. Number of times I said that is 0, but I'm going to use that.
There we go.
You know, Nora Ephron said, everything is copy. I love that. I always think about that. Meaning whatever anybody says is yours. You can use that, which is probably not legally true, but it's sort of true. Like, you know, your experiences are your experiences, and if somebody said something during that experience, throw it in, even if it's fiction, you know, if you're writing fiction. And that's what she said, everything is copy. I love that.
good times indeed. Definitely good to know too, because yeah, it's so true. Because like artificial intelligence, like yeah, even all those wonderful authors that they put into the darn technology for it to copy, it's like it can only go so far. Like you can't really replicate a complete human mind, especially their emotions too that go into the writing. So yeah, AI is here to stay, but it's like, hey, written by humans still the best way to go.
I think so. I think AI is going to do great things in medicine and science and probably a billion other areas. But the creative arts, leave it to humans, I think. Anyway, we digress.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So my goodness, fun question for you. If your fabulous book, What She's Hiding, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
That's interesting. I think it would be a street taco. You know what I'm saying? And I think it would be very spicy. And I think it would be the kind of street taco you just can't stop eating. And you go back to that truck every time, because as hot as it is, as spicy as it is, as much as it hurts, it's so good.
Oh, there we go. So I'm talking about indeed. First one actually says street taco. That's freaking hilarious.
Is that right?
Yeah, you actually are, because someone said tacos before, but nah, you mentioned street tacos. There's a huge difference.
Look, I live in the West, man. There's several hundred kinds of tacos out here. You got to be specific. You know what I'm saying? It's funny because in restaurants, they actually call them street tacos if they're serving them, which I find amusing. But anyway. Do you ask that question to all of your guests, all your writers?
Oh, yeah. Ever since, like, it was probably like a few authors after I interviewed you that year, I just started asking that randomly because I was like, okay, what? Because they say books are food for the mind, and that just popped into my mind as a question.
Yeah, so, I know. Hey. Well, see, now here's the thing. That was my first reaction. That may not be the best reaction, but it was my first reaction. And I think that's what you deserve to hear. As a matter of fact, the more I think about it, the more I like it. Street talk.
See, best college tacos and D's. That's right indeed. No chain or nothing. Just something from the street, y'all. That's right indeed, especially on a Tuesday or any day, period.
Right. That's right. Man.
Well, we're coming down to the magical question reserved for guests who come back for round two.
Is that right? You have a magical one? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, that's right indeed. That's right. You're in a rare club, my friend. That's right indeed. So the good news is you're called to give the final keynote speech of your life. But the thing is, your audience is all 8 billion people on Earth. We were able to find enough space in Texas to put all the humans in one building, and you get to have them for freaking 90 minutes. What would be the main message you would love to share, and what would the main points of that message entail?
Man, that's quite a setup. I think if I had the opportunity, I would say, look around. You're going to see a bunch of people, and you owe them, the people you can see, you owe them the best you can offer, because you have to not only take care of yourself, but you have to take care of the people around you. You can see, like, the guy next to you, the guy in front of you, the guy behind you. But in addition, you can't forget about taking care of the guy all the way across, all the way on another story of this building. You don't know that guy. You know the guy sitting next to you and around you, behind you, in front of you. But you don't know that guy. But he is every bit as deserving of your love, respect, and care, and help if he needs it or she needs it, as the guy sitting next to you. And I think that's what I would want people to understand. I mean, it's kind of a short speech, but I could build it into a 2-hour speech if you want, but I don't think we have that kind of time.
Hey, but I love it, though. It's a great message.
Is that like what everybody answers?
It varies. Funny enough, we had one person who was just completely flabbergasted, like, dude, I don't even know what the hell to say to that.
So, obviously, that person never wrote fiction.
No, they didn't. They were not
writers,
fiction,
man. We can make it up fast. That's what you got to do, man. You got to always be thinking about making it up fast. Well, it's a good question. I like the question. I hope you appreciate the answer.
Hey, it's true. Because, hey, that's what you're doing now, man. You owe it to the person next to you. Give your best. And a man's been dropping the heat today.
Yeah.
That's right indeed. That's right indeed. It's that awesome heat. And it ain't artificial either.
Right. Good point. Excellent point.
That's right. My man's probably going to be running that joke into the ground for the foreseeable future now. It's like, the name is art. It doesn't stand for artificial, because I create real art.
Honestly, I don't think I'm actually going to run that into the ground.
There you go, run it into the clouds.
Yeah,
the real
exactly.
ones, not the technology ones.
Exactly.
Help with the gold door. Oh, man. Well, before I open a random rabbit hole again, folks need to keep up with you and all that you do. So for those need to do just that and cop some copies of your magical books, what's the best way for folks to do so?
Well, you can go down to your local bookstore and demand it if they don't have it there. Or you can always go on Amazon or Barnes & Noble website or any of the websites that sell books, because they all have it. and they can get it to you in a matter of days, so you can read it right away. And I think, yeah, it's easy to get. And if people want to know more about me, I have a website, artbellwriter.com. And it's got, you know, stuff about the book, stuff about my last book, some of my other writing, biography. Oh, I do want to mention this. I don't even know if it's relevant, but I do want to say, and this is on my website, this time we did a discussion guide for book groups, because I love talking to book clubs, you know, and they call me up and they say, hey, all right, we know you're not really going to want to come to our book club, but will you come to our book club? And it's like, yeah, sure. I love to talk to people reading my book. So if anybody out there has a book club, and I know you all do, some of you anyway, and you want me to, you know, show up at your book club by Zoom, if, you know, you're not in the neighborhood, I would be happy to. I would be happy to. And there's nothing more fun, I think, than talking to an author about his book. I've always enjoyed that. Or her book. You know, I mean, I used the his and her, their book. There we go.
Hey, it's true indeed. That's right indeed. Sir, that right, folks? If you got a book club, my man's got Christmas ready for you right here.
That's right. That's right. I want you to know that. I'm here for you. I am here for you. And so if you want to get in touch with me, go to my website, Art Bell Writer. That has to be easy to remember. Artbellwriter.com. And, you know, it's got my email address and the whole thing.
Woohoo! Well, there you have it, folks. ArtBellWriter.com, and he's got you covered right indeed. You'll love to see it indeed. So be sure to cop some copies of his magical books, both the memoir and this one indeed. And be on the lookout for the sequel, y'all. It's going to be good stuff indeed, because you never know what's going to pop out of his brain. It's going to be extra spicy. Who knows? It might be a street taco with, I don't know, shoot, a pizza from actually Italy. I don't know. You never know what could expect indeed. And he's just getting started still indeed. So my goodness, any parting words before we close up shop?
Well, again, Dom, it's really an honor to, you know, be invited to your podcast, which is a great podcast, to be invited twice, because, you know, you already heard what I had to say once. I mean, so did your listeners. So you were counting on something here that maybe wouldn't have shown up, but I really did enjoy having this conversation with you.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three, and be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.